This week on Uncharted Space, it's Muppets from Space. But you won't find Gonzo or Miss Piggy here. That's because we're talking about Farscape, the Henson-affiliated sci-fi channel series from the early 2000s. It's truly one of the strangest shows ever made, and I hope you'll stick around to talk about it with us. Welcome to Uncharted Space. I'm Josh.
I'm Craig.
Hi, Craig.
Did you think I'd be someone else?
I wasn't sure.
You hoped.
No, man. No way.
Okay. Sometimes I hope it's Chris Evans.
That's a deep cut reference to a different episode of this very podcast. For the folks at home, on this podcast, one of us will talk about a science fiction property, if it's a movie or a TV show or a book or a comic, that has special significance to us, but the other person hasn't seen it. In a way, it's sort of a pitch where one friend tries to convince the other to watch or read this thing that they love so much.
And what are we talking about this week, Josh?
This week, we are talking about the 1999 to 2003 sci-fi channel original Farscape.
My name is John Crichton, an astronaut.
A radiation wave hit, and I got shot through a wormhole.
I'm lost in some distant part of the universe on a ship, a living ship, full of strange alien life forms. Help me. Listen, please.
Have you ever seen an episode of this show, Craig?
In preparation for this podcast, I have watched the first 7 minutes of the pilot. That is it.
Wait, did they get to the aliens yet?
I stopped right then.
But you got a visual on the aliens.
I did.
You made the aliens.
The beautiful Jim Henson Creature Shop creations.
So the premise of the show Farscape is basically this like super cool dude, American astronaut, John Crichton, gets sucked into a wormhole and he's flung to the other side of the galaxy where he joins this crew of fugitive Australian aliens. Australians, I guess. And they're all on a living spaceship that's named Moya. And the show is all about Crichton's adventures on the crew. And he's also searching for his way back to Earth. Now, this is, you know, 1999 through 2003. So it's sort of the beginning of this like golden era of sci-fi channel original programming. The single season of Firefly was right in the middle of the Farscape run. And right after it ended, we got Battlestar Galactica. So a lot of like really, really top-notch sci-fi channel stuff happening. It was also the beginning of sci-fi's golden era of canceling all of their best shows, right after a cliffhanger in particular. They did it to this show. They did it to Firefly, as we all know. Dark Matter got that treatment. The Expanse, which fortunately was rescued by another network, but
really not another network so much as rescued by one man who really wants to go to space himself. So much so he was, you know what? That was his Twitter. He bought The Expanse instead of Twitter. It was a better investment, I think.
Farscape did do like a made for TV movie that wrapped up some of the loose ends, but it was still like a pretty unsatisfying ending to what I think is a brilliant series. One of the things that I love about Farscape, in particular among science fiction television, is that it is fucking weird.
Goodness, let the big dog eat. He's a Cinderella boy. Oh my, Bob, this is a big chance for the kid from the Uncharted Territories. He's about 2 feet off the green here on the 18th, 2 strokes off the lead. Question is, will he chip or will he use the putter?
Just a very strange show, and it portrayed aliens as like truly alien in a way that I don't think much episodic sci-fi had up until that point. As you mentioned earlier in the intro, two of the main characters on the ship are puppets designed by the Jim Henson Creature Shop. Several other ancillary characters are also puppets. And, you know, at times it really does kind of have like a Labyrinth feel to it, at least visually. I don't think it feels overly fantastical the way Labyrinth does. The puppets feel like characters you'd expect to see in a universe like that one. But you could sort of expect David Bowie to walk out at any time and you wouldn't be surprised at all.
In general, I'm never surprised if David Bowie walks out. I'm always expecting him, even now. Even now.
R.I.P. to one of the greats.
It's going to be really sad if somebody's listening to this and this is the moment they learn that David Bowie is no longer among the living.
What the fuck? Bowie's dead?
I didn't tune into this for an obituary.
I've been living under a rock for the last 10 years, and this is the first piece of media I've consumed. For some reason.
So did you watch the show when it came out week to week when it originally aired?
No, not at all. I think that I saw an episode of it on the Sci-Fi Channel in like the early 2000s and was basically like, what the fuck is this? This is a bizarre show. And I just don't think I was ready for it at the moment. I sought it out after reading an article about it, you know, well into the streaming era.
So post Battlestar Galactica, post Firefly.
Oh yeah. I mean, my first viewing of this show was as a binge.
Oh, wow. You said a second ago that you looked at it and it was too weird and then you sought it out years later. In sort of poking around the internet, I found a lot of people who expressed similar opinions that they watched it when they were younger and maybe even got into a few episodes, didn't like it, and then they came back to it as an older person and really did like it. What do you think it is about that difference in perspective that both they and you experienced?
I mean, part of it, I think, was that when I was 17 years old, I was actively fighting the outward impression that I was a nerd.
Uh-huh.
Which isn't to say that I had turned my back on science fiction or anything like that, but I think I was especially sensitive to anything that felt weird in a way that I kind of internalized. This is my therapy session, by the way. Thank you for participating with me.
I'll bill you later.
The sort of one memory that I have of seeing that show was of seeing like the pilot, one of the Muppets that's connected to the ship, and his face appears on this weird like concave plate screen thing. And he was talking in this weird voice and everybody was all psychedelic. And I was just like, this is too much for me right now. I don't know if that exactly answers your question.
Yeah. And you even used the term Muppet. I was thinking about how when you described the show to me and you said puppets, I had this very juvenile impression in my head. But it's not juvenile at all. It's a very adult show.
Oh, yeah. And like I said, the puppets don't feel like Kermit the Frog. They're living, vibrant characters that are in their place. Like, you don't bat an eye at seeing them unless you're 17 and trying to be cool.
So you're watching this as a possibly COVID-era binge. You sought it out. Even so, though, were you in it from that first episode, or did it take a while for you to get invested in everything?
I was intrigued by the first episode. Like many shows, it has an uneven first season, and I think there were points at which I was tempted to stop watching it. But by, you know, most of the way through the first season, it got like really consistently good. I don't remember. I think it's near the end of the first season. They introduce the main villain that remains the main villain throughout the rest of the run of the show. This character named Scorpius.
Perhaps you're hoping I will lose my composure and kill you before I've extracted any information. I long ago learned the advantages of patience.
Played by an Australian actor whose name I don't know, which describes almost all of the actors on that show because it's an Australian show that just happened to hire one American guy to play the lead.
So you were intrigued early on. What was the point where you found a deep investment in the characters?
I'm sort of embarrassed to say it, but one of the sort of ongoing concerns throughout the show is this like, will they or won't they thing between Crichton and this sexy stormtrooper analog named Aaron Soon.
What is your rank and regiment? And why are you out of uniform? Rank and regiment now.
Who's an alien, but one of the aliens that looks like humans. She's this like real badass soldier who is sort of brought on that ship against her will. And at first, like really pushes back against the idea of joining this like crew of fugitives. But as time goes on, she starts to slightly let her guard down and the relationship between her and Crichton blooms. And it really turns into like a very nice love story.
Oh, so it was the romance that pulled you in.
It was. And also the writing, especially after the, you know, the first half of the first season, the writer's room really found its footing and they wrote really compelling stories in the way that all of the best soft sci-fi. What am I trying to say here?
It good.
It was good writing.
As I mentioned, I watched the first 5 or 6 minutes of the pilot and I don't know what Brian Henson's involvement was in the story, but there is the two Crichtons are walking down the hallway toward the launch site. And the younger Crichton says to the older Crichton, I love everything about you as my father, but it's so hard to be your son, to be in your shadow with everything you've accomplished. And that really just like hit me in the chest. I'm like, wow, this could be Brian Henson talking to his late father, Jim.
Son, I can't help being who I am, who I was.
It's not who you are, Dad. I love who you are. It's being son of who you are. Look, I can't be your kind of hero.
No, you can't be.
It really could be. The scene you're describing, too, is an early in the pilot, like, exposition dump. Although they do come back to Crichton's relationship with his father quite a few times.
Are there flashback episodes where we go back that way, or does he come back to Earth somehow? Or is that a spoiler?
There are ways in which he interacts with his father, or somebody that looks like his father.
Oh.
Or really anything I say would be a spoiler at this point.
Is it Scorpius?
No. So I will tell you that one of the sort of running things, especially in the later seasons, is that Scorpius implants like a chip version of Scorpius in Crichton's head. There's a lot of really funny interaction between Crichton and his head Scorpius.
What the hell? Sorry, but I need your attention. And we only have a few moments. This is a fascinating place in your memory and hard to find.
What do you want?
So that's another thing about the show is it's really funny. It's very much a product of its time. It's got tons of pop culture references that come like right off of like TRL. A thing that I like about sci-fi that is set in the current era is that they can drop sci-fi references as long as that show is far enough in the future that it doesn't contradict the canon of this show. Like, we get a lot of like beam me up Scotty type jokes in the show.
Do they have transporters?
No, there are no transporters. That's actually, thank God, finally get a sci-fi show with no transporters, which I think is one of the dumber inventions in science fiction.
Well, it's a budgetary invention.
Did we talk about how transporters kill you on the last episode?
We didn't.
One of these days we're going to go deep into how transporters kill you.
On the Breaking Bad episode, for sure. Let's jump back to what you're talking about, the ships and how they are sentient. Is that all the ships? Is that just the Moira? Tell me more about that.
Moya.
Moya. Oh, pardon me.
Sanzar is a member of a class of ship called Leviathans. I believe that they are the only sentient ship.
And are they sentient by artificial intelligence or by natural biology?
Natural, although I think that there was some selective breeding that happened. They go a little bit into the mythology of the Leviathans.
So you mentioned your enjoyment of the romance. Were there other elements that you particularly looked forward to as you went from episode to episode in your Farscape binge?
The relationships between all of the characters are really solid and enjoyable. There's a guy who's like the version of a Klingon that they have on that show, but you know, like big jacked warrior race with a bunch of weird stuff on his face.
I saw him in those first 7 minutes. Yeah. He's the one who grabs him right at the beginning, right?
Exactly. So that guy, Dargo, is very like antagonistic towards John Crichton initially, but they develop like a really sort of delightful bromance as the show goes on.
He didn't believe you?
No.
Well, what was that thing about a slim duck?
Slam dunk.
Whatever. It doesn't matter. He's throwing us off, Moya.
Yeah, well, you want to give it a go?
No.
I can't believe you pissed him off.
I didn't piss him off. You pissed him off.
It's a really quippy show in general, and everybody's quipping with the best of them. It just quips all the way down.
You know, it's interesting you say that because in the sort of setup that you were giving me, how these are, what did you call them, outlaws or rogues or something?
Fugitives, yeah, I think is what I said.
Fugitives. And now what you're describing with the quipping of everybody, it sure sounds a lot like much was stolen from this for Firefly.
You know, I don't know what the sort of respective production schedules were for the two shows. There is definitely like, there are some thematic similarities between the two. Farscape is much less of a Western, and I mean both visually and thematically and plot-wise. But I think that the Crichton character on Farscape and the Malcolm character on Firefly are built on the same archetype in a way that is fairly obvious if you look at both of those characters.
So as a Star Trek fan, what was it like moving from a world that is based on order to a world which it sounds like is largely based on chaos?
Of course, when you start watching any show, you have to learn the rules of that universe. but I learned the rules of the Star Trek universe so young that they're just sort of second nature to me. And so any other show that doesn't abide by those rules is sort of breaking the mold in a way that can be challenging. And it takes you a while to sort of establish what the new rules in this universe are. I think Farscape in particular, being as chaotic as it is, really sort of takes you a while to learn the rules. And then, of course, the writers love to subvert those rules at any opportunity.
Well, you mentioned how this show sort of kicked off a golden age of science fiction, both on the Sci-Fi Channel and in general. How do you think the show would be different, assuming Farscape hadn't been made in the past, if it was made today?
People talk about shows holding up, like, ooh, that thing wouldn't hold up, right? Like, that's the language we use. And I think that in a way you could say that about Farscape, in that they couldn't really make a show like that today with that tone, with the language that they use. There is sort of like mild latent misogyny throughout the show that I think wouldn't fly today in a way that I don't know that networks would have the appetite for anymore.
Well, let's say there was an appetite for more Farscape. What would you prefer, a remake or a continuation?
In terms of things that I already love, it's very hard to make a remake of them in a way that I actually would like, that I don't find just sort of like wholly disrespectful.
So then a continuation it is.
This is a realization that I'm having as we start to go through a lot of this media, is that a lot of it happened like 20 years ago or more. A continuation is fine 5 or even 10 years later, but you know, now the actors are all old. Like, you'd really have to write a 20 years later story.
That could be fun.
I think it could.
Well, Josh, thank you so much for taking us on a tour of Farscape. I am immensely intrigued. I have to admit, this is one of those shows that what little I saw of it, because I didn't have, I don't think, network television at the time it was airing, or cable television or whatever it was on. What little glimpses I did see of it seemed like, oh, that's probably not for me. But from those first 7 minutes of the pilot and from everything you've said here today, I am thoroughly looking forward to diving into Farscape.
I definitely think it's one of those shows that if you can make it through the pilot and enjoy it, you're going to like the whole show.
Outstanding. Well, thank you so much, Josh.
My pleasure as always.
This has been Uncharted Space. We'll see you next time.
We can put some good reverb on that later. So, Craig, do you remember the Star Trek episode Tin Man?
I'm guessing it had to do with Data.
It does not, at least not primarily. It's an episode about the discovery of like a biological living spaceship.
Oh, the space whales.
Not the space whales like in The Voyage Home.
No. Wasn't there an episode of Star Trek where there were space whales like, and they watched them being born and they didn't know what it was?
Oh, that was the one where the weird whale-like creatures attached themselves to the ship.
Yeah, but anyway, the Tin Man.
The Tin Man.